Welcome to the Wellsteading Podcast. This is episode 79. It's January 28th, 2015. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. Here at the Wellsteading Podcast, I try and teach you from what I call the 10 wealth building principles. If you're not familiar with those, go back and listen to the first 10 episodes of this podcast. These are the principles that I learned over the last 30 years as I've built my own personal wealth. And the important thing that I stress in wealthsteading is that it's not about the money. It's about the freedom and the independence and the liberty. You see, money may not buy happiness, but it can buy freedom. It all depends on how you put that money to use. You can enslave yourself with debt and consumer products, or you can learn to put your money to work for you so that you're not working for your money. Well, in each episode here at the Wellsteading Podcast, I try and cover one or more of those principles. Now, I don't always specifically come out and say, hey, today we're going to talk about wealth building principle number 3. Well, sometimes I'll do that, but many times I don't. But as I prepare for every show, I start out with those 10 wealth building principles, and I try and weave a little bit of that wisdom into every episode. Well, today we're going to talk about what's going on in the stock market. And this isn't going to be a normal market review. I'm not going to talk about 50-day moving averages and closing prices and volume and all those kind of things. What I do want to say is that today the market continued its pattern of wide fluctuations and turbulence and back switching. You know, this whole month of January, I've stayed out of the market for the most part because it's been unpredictable. One day it'll drop a percent or more, the next day it'll go back up, and then 3 days later it'll go back down. The way I like to swing trade, I look for well-defined patterns. Now, some of these are short-term trends, like, you know, maybe a couple weeks or a couple months. Others are longer. But when the market's moving along one way all day long, and then all of a sudden the Federal Reserve comes out and says something, and all of a sudden the market collapses, well, that's not a trend. That's arbitrary. And it's very, very difficult to make money trend trading in those kind of markets. Well, that's my perception of it anyways. And then for those of you that are buy and holders and you just have your money in a 401k plan and you're constantly dollar cost averaging and you just let your money ride things out, well, that's all well and good. But you know, some of these corrections can cause you to lose, you know, 5, 10, 15, maybe 20% in a very short period of time. Now, we haven't seen that in the last couple years, and people are spoiled because of that. We haven't seen a correction of more than 10% in the last 2.5 years. And that's just what happened last October of 2014. We barely had a 10% correction. It didn't last very long. Since around the summer of 2012, every time there's a little dip in the market, maybe a little 4, 5, or 6% dip in the market, traders keep coming in, buying on those dips, and raising the price back up. Now, that was a discernible trend, and so you could have maybe played that out over the last couple years. But you see, that isn't a long-term trend. That can't last forever, because that's just not the way markets operate. Markets generally have that boom and bust cycle that we talked about, that business cycle, and they go every 2 or 3 years with major corrections, 10, 15, 20, 25%. Those of you that remember back to 2008, we had about a 45, 48% correction. Now, that was a big one. That was a historic recession. But those come along on a fairly reliable cycle as well. Say, you know, about every generation or so, every 35, 40 years. So these things do happen. And in particular, I want to stress these 10 and 15 and 20% corrections generally happen every couple years. And we haven't had one. And so just like an earthquake where stresses build up in the earth, you can assume that we're about due for one. Now, will it happen tomorrow? Will it happen next week? Will it happen in another year? I have no way of knowing, but you have to watch for those stresses in the fault lines. You have to look for these cracks and these signs, the things that are going to precede the earthquake. You want to look for those same things in the stock market. And this wild fluctuation that we're seeing right now, you can relate that to like earth tremors. As I mentioned, the markets have been turbulent all month long, and in reality, they were actually turbulent all last year. We ended up having a very nice year in terms of overall returns from the stock market. But the market went in and out of correction more than just about any year I can think of. Now, they weren't huge corrections. They were only little 5 and 6% moves. But that still shows a change in personality of the way the stock market had performed in 2013, for example. But the turbulence that we're seeing in January of this year is definitely a change in personality from what we've seen in these previous couple year cycles in the stock market. It's getting rougher. It's getting more unstable. It's getting more unpredictable. It's getting more arbitrary. And those are all signs that you want to watch for. Now, many of you, and I know this is true because I read your emails, there's a lot of young listeners to this podcast, and a lot of you didn't start investing until after the last recession. So you really didn't get into the market until around 2008. So your experience as an investor has been just what's happened over the last 6 years or so. And this has been a Federal Reserve-induced rally. It's been a very nice run. It's been a very good secular bull market, but it's come at the whims of the Federal Reserve. And every time they've printed up more money through quantitative easing, the market has gone on to new highs. And that's recently come to an end. The third round of quantitative easing stopped in October of 2014. I don't think it's a coincidence that the turbulence and the volatility and all these switchbacks have been more magnified and more dramatic since October of 2014. But for those of you that are new to investing and you've only been in the market these last few years since the recession, you've pretty much seen the market go up every year. Well, that doesn't always happen. That's not the way the market works. You have to be very cautious that if there is a downturn, that you don't get wiped out. Now, I'm not saying there's going to be an economic collapse and your money's going to be worthless. That's the farthest thing from what I'm saying. I don't believe that at all. I'm not trying to sell you any hype or scare you and try and get you to buy gold and bury it in your backyard. I'm just saying that if you've been in the market over the last 3 or 4 or 6 years and you've made very nice returns, you could wake up one day over a period of a few days and find out that your wealth has been cut by 25%. And again, that wouldn't be a one in a million experience. That wouldn't be like a rare eclipse occurrence. That's something that normally occurs in a healthy stock market. So just be aware of that. Okay, I digress again. Let's get back to what happened today. So here's what happened specifically today, and then I want to tell you why it's so important. Okay, and I know I said I wouldn't talk about 50-day moving averages, but hey, I'm a nerd. I'm a geek when it comes to this stuff. I just can't resist. So I'll just say it this once. On Tuesday of this week, that's one trading session ago, that's yesterday, the market had a bad day and it opened up below its 50-day moving average. That's the 50-day moving average on the S&P 500. Now, it had been above that average for the previous 3 trading sessions or so, so it looked like we were recovering from the recent lows that happened around January 14th, 15th or so. The S&P 500 broke up above its 50-day moving average, which is an excellent sign. That took place around, I think, January 22nd. And so it looked like, you know, blue skies, smooth sailing ahead. S&P is going to go on to make another all-time high. We're in earnings season where companies are reporting the earnings that they made in the fourth quarter of last year. Earnings had originally been expected to be up as much as 11%. Now, once oil prices had started to fall, they backed off of that, and they knew that, you know, the energy producing and the energy sector, companies like ExxonMobil, Halliburton, Schlumberger, these people would obviously be affected. But a lot of experts came out and said, no, it's just going to be maintained to, you know, those companies in the energy sector. It's not going to be a contagion. It's not going to spread beyond that. So the market was going back up again. Things were looking all rosy. And then we started to get more reports, particularly from the multinational consumer-type product companies. Procter & Gamble, I think Johnson & Johnson announced, but those kind of companies. Now, some of them did very well. Starbucks, for example, they announced very good earnings. But others didn't. A lot of these multinational companies either had a bad fourth quarter or they're projecting that the first quarter of this year, when they give their guidance, they're saying that 2015, that their profits are going to go down, and it's not related to oil, it's related to the strong dollar. And you know we've been talking about that for months now. We've been talking about that really since early last year. The strong dollar hurts multinational corporations that have operations overseas where they make money, and then when they bring that money made in foreign markets back to the United States, when they repatriate it because the U.S. dollar has appreciated, say, against the yen or the euro or the kroner, whatever the local foreign currency would be, that means that the profits they made in those local foreign currencies, they're not worth as much when they bring them back to the United States. Consequently, their earnings are reduced. Now, you remember, one of the reasons that we like investing in the S&P 500 is that something like over 50% of their profits come from overseas. And so that gives us good diversification. But right now, when we're in a global slowdown, right now, when we're in an environment where all the central banks are devaluating their currency and it's making the U.S. dollar go up, that becomes a two-edged sword and it cuts against you. And so now these multinational companies, these big blue chip companies on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and the S&P 500, these companies that normally we would say are well diversified and that they can weather the storms, well, they're actually getting hit because their sales overseas, either what they export or the operations that they have in those countries, and they repatriate that money, it's now worth less. Or for the companies that export, well, they're going to sell less product overseas in foreign markets because the U.S. dollar has appreciated something like, 13-15% this year. So that means that that was a 15% price increase in these foreign currencies. And so consequently, people in foreign markets can't afford to buy American products. American-made products would just not be competitive. And that's everything from corn and soybeans to cars or machinery, things like Caterpillar. Caterpillar was one of the companies that announced in the past week or so. They make the big, construction or mining equipment that's used in farming, road construction, mining of coal or drilling of oil. So Caterpillar got a double whammy. Their sales not only went down because of the strong dollar, and say someone in Singapore or someone in Malaysia, they can't afford to buy Caterpillar equipment now because the price went up 15%. And then at the same time, Caterpillar got hit with lower oil costs and overall lower commodity prices. Things like copper and coal, all these commodities along with oil have collapsed. The prices have come down in some cases more than 50%. And so now people aren't exploring for oil. People aren't digging as much coal. And what happens? That means you don't need Caterpillar equipment. So consequently, again, their sales are collapsing. The building boom that occurred in China over the last 20 years, that's slowing down. The overall Chinese economy is cooling off. Now again, you don't need construction equipment. You don't need lumber. You don't need copper wiring. So that's what's dragging the world economy. That's why things have been so turbulent lately. Because investors and traders are coming to that realization that no matter how much these central banks devaluate their currencies, it just doesn't seem to be enough to pick up overall global demand and global consumption. We live in a world right now where we have far too much debt. That's both public debt and private debt. Individuals as well as governments have taken on so much debt that it's hard for them to refinance, or it's hard for them to buy more things because they can't pay off the things that they own. And then at the same time, and this gets into malinvestments that we talked about with Austrian economics. And this is how malinvestments occur. Because all this easy money, because all this free debt that was out there, countries and individuals and people bought things that they didn't need and things that they couldn't afford. They did this because banks and governments intervened in the economy and created really easy money and really cheap interest rates. They made money borrowing cheap. And they lowered standards for people to be able to borrow. And I'm not talking just about the housing bubble that we had in the United States, going back between 2000 and 2006. I'm talking about this happened all over the world, and it continues to happen today with consumer credit card debt, with government building projects around the world. All these things are being built with fake, phony monopoly money. Now, that not only creates the problem with the people that have taken on this debt and they build things that don't need to exist. For example, you've heard about the bridge to nowhere. But the other problem is that all this spending in the economy, it distorts the price discovery mechanism that we talked about when we talked about Austrian economics, and it sends the wrong signals throughout the economy. For example, it tells companies that there's a shortage of copper, that we need more copper because everybody's building skyscrapers and building homes and they need all this copper wiring and copper plumbing. And so the signal that's sent into the marketplace is we need more copper. So copper mines go out and they explore for new copper deposits. They buy more equipment from Caterpillar so that they can dig deeper or dig faster or so that they can process more ore. And it's just not copper. The same thing would happen in the lumber industry or in the timber business, where, you need these wood products to build homes or to build buildings. And so they plant more forests and they buy more logging equipment. And again, all this goes through the economy, whether it's steel or the production of nails or the building of, new government buildings to support growth, government buildings, police stations, fire departments, schools. See, all these things are being built because the message that's being sent through the economy is that there's all this growth taking place. But all the growth is taking place because of phony money. That's what we call malinvestment. These investments were made in the wrong resources. The science of economics is about managing scarcity. And so when you apply your resources in the wrong areas, when you deploy your money and your capital to build an apartment building in Beijing that no one's going to live in, well, that was a malinvestment. That was a bad investment. And again, it just doesn't stop there, but it goes on because the cement, the lumber, the copper, the steel, all those things that were malinvested into that apartment building, they rippled through the economy. Caterpillar built more big, you know, heavy earth-moving machinery for the construction industry that didn't need to be built. United States Steel made all kinds of steel girders that they didn't need to produce because there really isn't a demand in the marketplace for it once that fake money evaporates. And that's what's happening now. We live in a world of overcapacity. There's too many factories in China making products that nobody wants. There's too many Caterpillar heavy machines being built that no one wants. So this all comes back to that malinvestment and government intervention in the marketplace, which distorts the price discovery mechanism. So back to the stock market. How does that affect what happened today? Well, as I mentioned, yesterday on Tuesday, the market didn't continue on its uptrend above the 50-day moving average. It actually opened up below the average and then couldn't climb any higher. So now the 50-day moving average is acting as resistance instead of support. It's acting as a ceiling, holding the prices down. And today the market struggled. It tried to recover. We had good earnings reports come out from companies like Apple, companies like Boeing, companies like Facebook. But you know what? In spite of all that, in spite of the market trying to rally and recover because these good earnings were being announced, it just couldn't overcome the fact that we had so many of these other big blue chip companies being affected by the strong dollar. And what really made things fall apart was this afternoon when the Federal Reserve came out, and this is a key point. They came out this afternoon and they said, and let me rephrase that. They didn't necessarily say this, but they hinted, because they never speak in plain English. But they hinted that they were going to stay the course and that they were going to maintain their plans to raise interest rates later this year. Well, again, that raising of interest rates, that means it's taking more of the funny money away and out of the marketplace. So that means that there'll be less malinvestments. And that's a good thing, except for the fact that for the last 7 or 8 years, the economy has been run and been juiced by all of this fake money. And so if you raise interest rates, you make money more expensive. That means that people can't be frivolous with it, and you won't have these malinvestments. But the problem is that the whole economy's been propped up on these malinvestments. The other problem is that if the Federal Reserve allows interest rates to rise, that will again strengthen the U.S. dollar. So that's going to hurt the people that export. That's going to hurt the multinationals that make their profits in foreign markets. And so the market reacted violently. The S&P 500 was down significantly. It ended up closing at its lowest trading range for the day. We're back down to the levels that we saw when we hit highs back in September. Now, this is a good area of support. It's right around that 2000 mark, and 2000 has kind of like a psychological strength to it. You know, it's a nice round number. So people hear that the S&P's at 2000 and they feel good about that. They feel good when the market attains that level, and then it just tends to bounce and stay around there. So 2000 is a good support level for the S&P 500 right now, but it's well past its halfway point between the 50 and the 200-day moving average. That's a bad sign. If it can't hold support at this 2000 mark, then we'll likely see the market drop to at least the levels that it hit back in mid-December, and if not lower, because if it gets that low, I don't see what would hold it up from hitting the 200-day moving average. And the 200-day moving average right now is sitting right around 1977. So what I'm saying here is that if this fear keeps up, the market could drop significantly down to 1977 over the next few days or so. Now again, you know I can't provide advice or recommendations in this podcast. I'm just looking at the charts. I'm looking at the turbulence. I see a very insecure market, a market that's wrought with fear, and I'm just giving you my interpretation of what could happen. Okay, I promised I wouldn't talk about 50 and 200-day moving averages, so I'm gonna digress from that. The point that I wanted to make in this episode today is that the market dropped precipitously simply on the words of the Federal Reserve. And it wasn't really even specific words of the Federal Reserve, because the Federal Reserve always talks in code and they nuance everything and they don't really give you a direct answer. So it's that nuanced response from the Federal Reserve that can cause billions of dollars to be just wiped out in a flash from the stock market when it was trying to recover. And the point I'm trying to make here is that's the arbitrary market we're in. The market isn't moving up and down on sound economic principles. Heck, it's not even moving up and down on the normal fear and greed that you'd get from human nature and human interaction. You know, the traditional things that would be looking for patterns in the marketplace. The market is simply moving up and down because of some words that are spit out by a central banker, whether they're the European Central Bank or the Federal Reserve in our own United States or the Bank of Canada that cut their rates earlier this week or late last week. You see, that's what's driving the volatility in these markets, and it's not something that you can forecast or that you can try and predict. You have no idea from day to day what a central banker in any of these countries is going to say and how drastic of an impact that might have on the stock market. That's why these type of markets are very concerning to me, and I try and avoid them. I don't think that I always have to deploy my capital. If I think the market's too turbulent, if I think the ice is too thin, I don't have to walk out on it. Now, that may sound like common sense, but that's not the case for most people on Wall Street. And I've mentioned this before, but it's worth explaining again. If you're invested in a mutual fund right now, go get your prospectus and read it. And somewhere there in small print, it'll say something like, the fund manager is required to maintain something like 85 or 95% of the assets in this fund is required to have them invested in some type of equity, some type of stock. It'll be, you know, large cap stocks, small cap stocks, whatever the dictates of that fund is, whatever the prospectus states that they invest in, they generally have to maintain 85 or 95% investment. That's a full investment. They can't go to cash. So even though they're sitting on Wall Street today and they're seeing the market plunge, they're seeing all this volatility, they're seeing all this uncertainty, they're unable to take profits. They may get to switch things around a little bit, you know, moving the deck chairs in the Titanic, switching from this stock to that stock, but they have to remain in stocks. So you see, they can't protect themselves from a downtrend. But you as an individual investor, you can do that. That's a strength that you have over the big tycoons on Wall Street. And you should never forget that. The ability to seek a safe harbor is the one, if not the only, advantage that the small individual investor has over the big fat cats on Wall Street. You see, they can't just liquidate their positions. And even if they could, in general, their positions are so large, they're selling billions and trillions of dollars of stocks, so they can't close out a position as fast as you can sell your fund and move to cash. So be conscious of that, and when it's appropriate, you should consider that course of action. Well, here's the bottom line. The markets are hanging on every word of these central bankers, and I think that all the smart money has come to the conclusion that once the euphoria of the low fuel prices has worn off, once these low oil prices are not going to give any big incentive to the airline stocks or to transportation stocks, because eventually that will wear off. Either oil prices will go back up or they'll just stabilize. And then once they stabilize, profits won't grow from there. Profits will just maintain. And Wall Street is all about growth. And so once this euphoria of low prices wears off, I think the smart money knows that there's nothing left. There's nowhere else to go, and there's nothing left to sustain this rally unless the Federal Reserve starts another quantitative easing program or cuts interest rates again or pulls some other kind of rabbit out of their hat. And so today, when the Federal Reserve said they were going to maintain their policy to raise interest rates later this year, that's what spooked the market, and that's why we saw the collapse in prices. Now, will that continue tomorrow? Will there be a sell-off at the end of this week? I have no way of knowing, and neither does anybody else. But this is what I'll tell you. Interest rates have dropped back down to their historic lows. The 10-year Treasury is trading right now for about 1.7. That pegs the fear index. That's a historic low, and the only time rates get that low is when investors are concerned and are fearful that they're going to lose their principal. And so they drive down the yields on government treasuries because they know that 10-year government treasuries are an extremely safe form of investment. So they're willing to take these very, very low interest rates as payments to park their money until they find a better investment opportunity. And right now, I don't think the smart money has a better option. Now, we'll see if they move into Germany or some of these other markets that may benefit from the low oil prices and the strong U.S. dollar. But remember, those oil price benefits are eventually going to taper off, and then if the Federal Reserve either cuts interest rates or does another round of quantitative easing or something like that, that's going to lower the price of the U.S. dollar. It's going to make the U.S. dollar price collapse, and it's not going to give these export markets like Germany or France or other parts of Europe, it's not going to give them a competitive advantage. And so again, that's why I think the smart money, they may be panicked, they don't know what else to do with their money, and so they're just throwing it at these U.S. government treasuries. So what you want to ask yourself is, if all the smart guys are concerned and they're investing their money at historic low rates of only 1.7%, then what are you doing with your money? Are you still invested in the stock market? Are you still 100% invested in mutual funds in your 401k program? Well, as I look at the statistics, I see that retail investors, that's just regular old mom and pop investors, they've jumped back in the market and they're fully invested like never before. So if the rug gets pulled out from under them and this market does collapse and we see a 10 or a 15 or a 25% drop in the stock market over the next, you know, 2 or 3 months, these retail investors that came late to the party and didn't get back into the market until, you know, sometime in 2014, they're going to get hurt. Again, I'm not providing with investment advice. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just telling you to take a look at some of these charts where you'll see the S&P 500 is having wild fluctuations, and you look at that and you ask yourself if you're comfortable with that. But I personally am not comfortable with it. I'm proceeding ahead with extreme caution. And I'll end the podcast on that note. Well, I do want to thank those of you that have gone out and subscribed in iTunes and left ratings and reviews. I really appreciate that. This podcast audience is growing every day, and it's because of the efforts of you out there that have written about it in your blog posts or talked about it on social media or have given us ratings and reviews. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. As always, if you have questions or concerns or you want to get in touch with me, you can do that through the website, which is wealthsteading.com. And until our next episode, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.